Accession number 29996, Mr. Mike Brown, Reel 4. Now, what exactly happens next then? You got to North Luffenham. What's going on at North Luffenham?
Well, we are there. We are formed into crews, as I say. I was teamed up with Bert Holt. We did the odd bit of night flying.
And what was it like flying at night in a glider?
Oh, not very good. You had to get the glider... had to be in exactly the right place. It did have lights on, fortunately. You know, a green and a red, I suspect. I can't really remember. And we only did a little bit of that. It was a landing. It wasn't too good seeing where you'd got to land at night.
Did you do any mass takeoff and landing exercises?
Not there. We were only there a very short time, and then we went to Downampney, which I don't know whether you know, is near Cirencester. And that was an airfield that was still being completed when we went there. And it was for Transport Command, 46 Group and 38 Group, mainly 46 Group.
They were going to be based there.
It was their airfield, and we were based on the airfield with them. They had Dakotas, and they were there for, well, parachute, for taking parachutists, towing gliders. They also did a lot of air ambulance work. After D-Day, they used to fly out to take stuff out to France and then bring the wounded back. And we were based there. That was going to be E Squadron's, that was E Squadron's depot, as it were. And we were all in Nissen huts there. We were separate from the huts were separate from the RAF, but we used to mess in the RAF mess, sergeant's mess. On the officers' mess. And we lived on there, on that airfield, doing again training, you know, takeoff, landing, a bit of mass takeoffs and mass landings.
Now, what were these mass takeoffs and landings like?
Well, the mass takeoff was a very, very clever thing. They'd line all these gliders up down the runway, and either side would be the towing aircraft, and then the first one would go off, and when he was halfway down the runway, the second one would take off. And by the time the third one took off, the first one was away up the far end, actually flying and away. The second one was halfway down, you know, and you were just taking off. And they got it eventually to about 45 seconds, I think, between each takeoff. Which was quite quick.
Now, what about when you were up there? Would you fly in formation or were you flying as...
Usually in pairs. Well, nearly pairs, you know. One would be in the left-hand stream and one in the right-hand stream. Near enough pairs. And we'd go round cross-country. I remember we used to go over Bath sometimes and... You know, you could recognize some place. I mean, we had to go where we were taken, didn't we? And then we'd come back and land and try and land, really.
Yeah, hang on, what were you towed by at this point?
Dakotas. Dakotas, yes, it was all Dakotas there.
And what about the mass landings?
Well, you had to land as close as you could to each other. In the airfield, you see. So... you know, we got quite good. I was taught how to take off by my first pilot and how, as I say, how to keep in position. And he did most of the landings, let's be honest. But I was shown how, and I mean, it was in their own interest. You know, if anything happened to them, we had to try and get it down.
Now... so what happens next? How does it? What's the next thing?
Well, really and truly, we did that until D-Day.
Now, did you go on the D-Day operation?
Yes.
Now, can we look at the whole thing then of the D-Day operation? Firstly, what sort of briefings did you get? When did they start?
Well, I don't think it was a week before D-Day, but it was quite a few days before D-Day. 4 days, say, something like that. And the whole camp was shut down. Nobody was allowed in or out. And on one of those days, all the RAF went and painted all their aircraft with white stripes on it, and all the gliders. You know, the white stripes that were on? Until then, they hadn't had white stripes.
Now, what did the white stripes mean?
Well, that they were allied. It was to tell people that, you know, they were friendly, shall we say. Hopefully friendly. But we were briefed very well. We had models. We knew where we were going.
And what do you remember of your briefing? How detailed was it?
Well, we knew all about the gliders that were going for Pegasus Bridge. And we knew that they had to secure those bridges because we were going to be the far side. And if we didn't, we were going to have to swim back across the river. And because of that, we all issued with a toggle rope, a 6-foot toggle rope, presumably to help us back. We could have done with those when we went to Holland, but we didn't have them then, did we? They were still in store. And
that river would be, oh, I forgot which name of the river.
Well, it was the Orne, the River Orne and the Orne Canal, the two, you see, at Pegasus Bridge, which they, you know, the clever ones were going to capture and did.
Now, anything else about the briefing or any special equipment?
No, I think we got all this extra food. The D-Day the rations, you know, special rations, where you could boil things up in the can, had a heater in it or something. And 24-hour packs, that's what I'm trying to say. 24-hour packs with porridge in it and all that, and boiled sweets. And I do remember all that. We were also issued with money, francs. I've still got mine somewhere. Five francs or something. Invasion money, in case we had time to spend it.
Now, is this the French government or French, which sort of money was it? If you see what it is. No point showing me, remember, just tell us.
It was special invasion money, for the invasion troops.
Anything else you got?
I don't think so.
Now, so that briefing took place, and what happened next?
Well, all the gliders were lined up.
Was this complete secrecy, I presume? You weren't allowed.
Oh, no, we weren't allowed out. No, you weren't allowed to phone. You weren't allowed to do any, and no communication. And the actual troops were down the road. There was a field down the road, and they were all in there, behind barbed wire. The ones, paratroopers, and the ones that were going to go by glider.
When did you find out what your load was going to be? Whether it was going to be men or vehicles?
No, it was vehicles. I can't remember when we found out, but it was a jeep, a trailer, and I think 5 men from the Royal Ulster Rifles. I can't remember when we found that out.
Now, so what happens next then?
I think that's...
Were you nervous?
That's funny, you see. My Bert said to me, my Bert Holt, he said, how do you feel about going? He said, are you nervous? I said, no, not really. I'm interested to see what I will do and what will happen. I remember him asking that as we were sitting on the runway just before we took off.
And so that was how you felt then?
Yes, I was I wasn't nervous. I was interested to see what was happening.
So, sort of excitement.
Yes, and how would I react? I was wondered whether I would do the right thing, because you don't know, you see, do you, in spite of everything.
Now, what were you wearing? I mean, I know this sounds, but I know it sounds that also, from underpants up. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, battle dress and with an airborne smock. And
what's an airborne smock? Do you mean a Sidka?
Well, I don't know what you call it. No, it's the one the paratroopers wear. It's the one that has the bit that comes up underneath and hooks on. It was called an airborne smock, camouflaged airborne smock. As opposed to, a lot of people just wore battle dress, didn't they?
So you had that.
And a helmet. Dress. We had special helmets. I don't know what they were made of. Anyhow, they're the ones that had the earphones. They were special for the glider, you know, the crash helmet, shall we say.
And who was that connected to?
Well, that connected to the TUG aircraft. With a wire going through the rope, if you were lucky. It didn't always work. So you were, in theory, connected to the TUG.
Did you have wireless or Morse? Or
no, nothing.
So it's just basically a telephone wire through
the rope? Well, yes, that's it, yes. So you could, you know, they'd say, oh, taking off and time to pull off sort of thing. Best of luck. You know, it was there for an emergency, really, but they didn't always work. I think ours worked.
Now, what do you remember about the take? What time did you take off? Which wave were you in? I'm not sure how many waves went in.
Well, this was 6 o'clock-ish, I think. 5 or 6. Well, during the day, I better put this bit in. During the day, Chatterton...
Is this on the 5th, then? The day before?
On the 6th, the morning of the 6th. After Chatterton, our Colonel Chatterton, who was our CO, flew in and gather round sort of thing and told us that the gliders at Pegasus Bridge had landed successfully. We were all very keen about that because we thought we'd have to swim back across it, you see. He came to tell us that, I remember. And I have a feeling we had a sort of little church service thing. And that was in the sometime during the day itself. And it wasn't till 5-6 o'clock in the evening, I think, that we took off. Landing round about 9-ish. Because it was all summertime.
So you think, what, 5 or 6? Do you know which? 6, you said.
No, I've written it down somewhere, but I...
Okay, so what was the takeoff like? How did it go?
We went all right. No trouble. It was really like an exercise. It really was.
And how many were going that time? How many of you? Roughly.
I can't. The airfield team, when we went on D-Day, on to Arnhem, 45 took off that day.
But at D-Day, less or more?
Well, I think there was possibly less. Not very many, you know, quite a... It was.
Did you get the chance to speak to, or did they speak to you, the people you were carrying, the Royal Horse Arrival?
Not really, no. We were busy, they were busy.
And how did the takeoff go?
Fine, just took off. It went like as it should do.
Did you have any, once you were up, did you have any duties as second pilot, other than to sit there? Do you know what I mean?
No, not really. All we had to do, we took it in turns to fly, you see, obviously, because it was hard work.
What way was it hard? Just explain.
Well, because physically, flying a glider on tow was quite hard work. Because you've got to keep the glider in position. And as I say, it wasn't hydraulic. There was no hydraulic thing. It was all pull and push, levers.
Now, it's not, from what you're doing there, what type of I should have asked you before, but what type of
half wheel. Half wheel.
Because that's the gesture you
make. That's it, yeah, half wheel. Well, three-quarter wheel, whatever.
And that pulled backwards and forwards and went...
Yes, that's right, yes, to keep you in position. Oh, no, you had to
but
do...
But that was hard work.
Well, it was relatively hard. Especially, as I say, it was fine weather, you know. And, I mean, I know it wasn't this time of day. But, you see, we were under a glass canopy like a greenhouse. But going out, we flew over parts of England we'd never flown over before. And I shall never forget the field after field full of tanks, and then another field full of guns, and then another field full of lorries, all that, the stuff that was accumulated, you know, obviously not so far from the ports. It was amazing. You know, there really was field after field of all this stuff waiting to go. Gave you confidence. And then, of course, there was all the boats. A continual boats hustling backwards and forwards, big ones and little ones, until we got to the coast. When told me, it was a Warspite was there, a big battleship. It was firing away.
What that looked like? You'd be quite high up, wouldn't you?
Oh, well, I think we were about 2,000, 2,500.
So you get a good view from there.
Oh, yeah, we had a good view. You know, it was over there, I remember. Because we went to the sort of left of things. The Orne being on the left, we went.
And what did it look like from up there?
It looked very good. You could see so much going on everywhere, but at the same time we had to sort of watch what we were doing, and it was around that time there was a bit of rumbling in town. I thought, what on earth's that? And apparently it was attack fire from somewhere. But it was only a matter of, you know, a few minutes.
So did you see any anti-aircraft?
No, didn't see anything like that.
And no German fighters? Or
no,
anything.
Nothing. Didn't see anything at all.
Now, what about when you're approaching the...
When we came into land, we could see the field. There obviously must have been other gliders down there before us. We could see the field. And it had posts in it. Some had been cut down and some hadn't, you know, anti-glider posts. And...
What could you do about anti-glider posts?
Well, avoid them, really. That's all you could do. And... as we came into land, mortar fire was going, you know, mortars were landing. And in actual fact, once we'd landed and I opened the door and I said to the blokes...
Hang on, take me through the landing first, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
How did the landing go?
Went well, no trouble.
No blows?
No, nothing. Good landing. Bert landed it, obviously, being the first part. I was there ready in case. But
well, he could have been shot or something.
Well, yes, well, that's it. You don't know, because I say mortar fire was going on all the time.
Now, how much mortar fire? Right, take me through this. What is the procedure on landing, and what do you do?
Well, the first thing, because I opened the doors and told the blokes it's time to get out. You know, we'd landed. They didn't necessarily know we'd landed, you know, because you can't see out. Can't see a lot out of a glider. And then I went back for my equipment, you know, because I...
Now, you said you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say, the first man out, I think he was a corporal, as he jumped out, he was wounded in the leg with a mortar. And we'd only been there about a matter of minutes. And he was wounded with a mortar fire, shrapnel.
How bad was the mortar fire?
Well, it was spasmodic and it didn't go on for very long.
So he was just unlucky?
Well, I think so, yes. It was somewhere was being mortared and it just happened to be he was in the, you know, a fragment flew his way. And
now, what did you do? So you get out or do you go back?
No, we got out. After I got my equipment, we went out and we had to take the tail off.
How'd you do that?
There are four bolts to undo. And they've got to be undone in the right order. You've got to undo the bottom ones before you undo the top ones, otherwise you get stuck. We manage that all right. I mean, it's daft, isn't it, going to war with a spanner in our pockets? But we all had a spanner, and it was my job to do that. I did that. And then we put the ramps down, and they drove the Jeep and the trailer out. And that was really our bit finished. You know, the glider part.
Now, you've got this second role as infantry, haven't you? I mean...
Yes.
Or I'm never quite sure. It's a lot of propaganda. People talk a lot
yes.
about them being fully trained infantry.
I wasn't a terrible trained infantryman because I was a tank man.
That's what I was just thinking.
No, I wasn't.
You don't seem to have spent any time at Fargo.
No, we didn't spend much. Now, there was criticism of that somewhere. Someone said, all this time when we were waiting for D-Day, and between D-Day and Arnhem, we should have spent more time doing infantry practice. Because we weren't really trained. I didn't really do any infantry stuff.
So you weren't a specialist weapons man?
No,
or like that.
No. You see, some of them were. They'd come from their units, but
so
I wasn't.
You'd done basic training, and you.
That's
knew
it.
A
that's
bit about it.
Okay. It wasn't true that we were. We weren't as good as we were cracked up to be.
I wouldn't. I'm only reflecting.
No,
what
you're right.
Have said.
You're
you know,
right.
A lot
you
of people
see.
Have said that they're meant to be.
They're meant to be. We were supposed to be, but you see, again, we were rushed. They wanted so many gliders for D-Day. And without having second pilots and their shortened course. See, everybody that, all the second pilots I knew, all on my course and the other few courses, they all went on D-Day and Arnhem. Well, without it, you wouldn't have been able to have so many gliders.
And the other point is, from what you told me, you didn't have any time for infantry training. Some of the others may have done, but you didn't.
Well, we didn't.
You may have had between D-Day and Arnhem. Though,
yes, we. Well, we would have had if we'd...
But you didn't. We'll perhaps come back to that.
Yeah.
So, you've landed, you've taken their tail off the
yeah,
water,
and
you've
got
the Jeep
out.
And the trailer off. Now, what happens to them?
They go off.
And do you know where they go off?
Nope.
Now, what do you and Bert do?
We then make our way to our... corner of the field, a rendezvous place, dodging gliders. So gliders were still coming in then. You had to be a bit careful.
This is really stupid of me, but where had you landed? Did the field have a name?
Romville.
It's Romville, yeah.
Yeah. I can't even, probably has got, I can't.
Romville.
I could find it in the book somewhere. It'll tell me which landing zone it was.
Now, so... You go to the rendezvous. Now, who's at the rendezvous? How many? What sort of things?
Well, there, all our squadron was supposed to gather up there, and I think most of us did.
Had there been many casualties?
No.
At that stage?
As far as the lot we went in, our squadron, that evening landing, everyone that went there got back. Not a single casualty.
Right. So you go to the rendezvous... And who meets you there? Is it the
well, group? Jackson. He was our...
Jackson is?
Our squadron commander, Major Jackson. He just died a couple of months ago.
Do you remember his first name?
Peter Jackson.
Now, what was your opinion of him? I mean, fit that into what happened. What did you think of Peter Jackson?
Well, he was all right. I think he was a bit of a vicious sort of thing, but...
In what way? In what way?
Well, he was, let's put it like that, he was a pre-war regular. Soldier. I think he was the first pre-war regular soldier to join the glider pilot regiment. And he had his ways, but we didn't see a lot of him, to be honest.
Did he know his stuff, or did
you? I think he knew his stuff.
Did he say anything when he got to the rendezvous? I mean,
no, I don't think so. Dig a hole there. All we did, it was we were in front of a row of trees. And bushes, and we all dug slit trenches all along there.
Now, I know this sounds daft, but what were the slit trenches like? How deep, how wide?
Well, as deep as you had to dig them. Not very wide enough for a person to...
So about 2.5 foot.
Yes, something like that. Say,
and were they two? Were they two man ones?
Well, we made them two man ones.
So was it you and Bert? Or
yes, I think. I can't honestly remember. I think it must have been. I think we'd have done it in crews, you see.
And were they properly sighted, or were they just any old?
No, they were all along the edge of the.
So just scattered along the edge.
Along the edge of the field, facing into the where we'd landed, the field we'd landed.
Now what weapons did you have?
Well, I had a rifle. And I might have had a dagger. You know, when we all issued with those dagger things at one stage.
The very sharp.
Yeah,
the commando ones.
Yeah, commando ones.
Had you done any training with that?
No.
So that was probably more dangerous to
well,
you.
Well, yes, I think. I remember when I went to Holland, the only thing I used it for was cutting an orange in half.
So you got that. Did you have hand grenades or
I think we had hand grenades between us somewhere. I can't remember.
But you had no automatic weapon?
No. There weren't many automatic weapons in our. One or two people had automatic weapons, but really we weren't. We're mainly rifle. The odd Bren gun, maybe a Piat and perhaps a Tommy gun or something. But that
so
was
not much firepower.
Not much firepower. We
and about how many of you were there? I'm not sure how many there were in the squadron. But
well, I'm not sure. Well, the whole squadron didn't go.
How many do you think?
Well, I think it's probably getting on for 50, I would think. But a guess, I'm not.
Now, what happened? So you're digging in. That would take some time.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Was it dark? I mean,
it was getting dark by then. And during the night.
Now, what happened that night? Is that the night of the 6th, 7th, isn't it?
Yes.
What happened that night?
That night, there was an awful lot of rustling and aircraft coming over, and we wondered what was happening. And we were told, and I think it's probably right, resupply mission. But otherwise, nothing happened.
Now, no German activity?
No, as far as we were concerned, over in the distance, but as far as we were concerned, nothing.
So you could hear stuff, but that's
we could hear it, perhaps see the occasional flash in the distance.
Now, what happened next, sir?
Well, in the morning, the commandos came, and they were taking over from us, and we marched back down to the beaches. We marched back over the bridges, the two bridges, Pegasus Bridge and the Horser Bridge, it's called now, Horser Bridge and Pegasus Bridge, back down to the beach. And we saw, going there, we saw one group. On one part, there were a lot of tanks all accumulated. I think what they were doing, they were taking their sea, you know, their, what do you call it, submersible bits off. And another place we saw where a few commandos had been killed advancing. And there was one place where there'd been a road block and an armoured car or something had been battered about. But otherwise, oh yes, there were snipers in the church tower. Probably Wistrom, I don't know. Because that's the only place I can think of there, some part of it. But otherwise we we strolled back. And of course everyone was wanting to think, cool, what are all those men coming back for? You know, they thought things had gone badly up there, obviously. But we all had special passes in our pay book.
Now tell me about these. What were these special passes?
They all said, to whom it may concern, please help this man back to the United Kingdom as quickly as possible. We all had that. And
in case you were needed for another.
Well, we were. Because when we did get back.
Now I've led you ahead there, sorry.
Yeah.
So, what happened when you got to the beach? What was going on the beach?
Well, we stopped a little way off while presumably negotiations were going on about where we'd go. And then we went down to the beach and there was all sorts of nothing definite that I can remember going on. We didn't cover a lot of beach, as it were. And we waded out to a infantry landing craft, which was very nice because it cooled our feet off. And climbed up and got onto this infantry landing craft, which was a bit messy because some of the troops had been in there for 2 or 3 days, you know, before they'd landed. Parts of it weren't very pleasant. But we were quite happy, really, to be on it, because we'd done what we were supposed to do.
And that took you all about, where did that take?
That took us back to New Haven.
And anything about the voyage back?
Just before we left, I remember a German aircraft coming over. It's about the only one we saw. Some aircraft.
But it didn't attack?
No.
And was it a bad voyage back? Was it?
No, I can't.
No seasickness?
No. We got back. I remember seeing a few bodies floating about in the water, which wasn't very nice.
And what was your overall feeling? I mean, you'd wondered how it would be. What was your feeling like?
Well, I mean, that's where we were deceived. We thought, well, that wasn't so bad, was it? You know, we'd been very, very lucky. Everything had gone right, really. Particularly, as I say, our particular bad. We lost other people from the squadron that went earlier. But our particular batch, the whole lot, got back. You know, without any trouble.